Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
I'm John Horn. I'm the host of Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. I'm here with our very first guest, Rainn Wilson.
Hi, John. It looks like I'm the first guest on the Geffen Unclothed. Unscripted. Unscripted. Yeah, let's go with that.
A marriage made in heaven, I guess.
Or Westwood.
Tune in for some of our exciting upcoming guests, David Copperfield, Neil LaBute, Neil Patrick Harris, Josh Gad, Rita Wilson, and many more. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app and on iTunes. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.
And I'm Rainn Wilson, the first guest.
You are the very first guest.
This was a huge mistake.
Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Huge mistake.
Hi, I'm Howard Mackler, one of the founders of RichUncles.com, real estate investing for everyone. Our $1 billion offering is now open for investment with a $500 minimum. RichUncles NNN REIT is a public non-listed REIT, a real estate investment trust that invests in single-tenant commercial real estate. Learn more by reading our prospectus at RichUncles.com. That's RichUncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by RichUncles for this single message and is intended only for residents in states where the offering is approved.
RichUncles.com or call 855-RICH-UNCLES.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a church. We're going to make it get on. Welcome to the show. It's CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hey, what happened to the other car sound from last week?
That was just a special thing.
Oh,
it was
a
special
thing.
Once in a while, I thought we were doing it.
We're back to my four banger. Jonathan Ward from Icon is here. It's great when good things happen to good people. So God bless you, Jonathan Ward. I so many things to get into, but I'm first off, just an overall. I tell people the smile on my face that we met guys like Jonathan Ward a long time ago when we were asking them how the business model ever worked. And the answer was there really isn't a business model. And then we met the guys from Singer a long time ago and the same questions applied.
Yeah.
And there are many other companies that are starting off. And like, I guess in the past, there were a whole bunch, you know, it was probably Bud and Miller and Coors. And now all these little artisanal beer places are popping up, these cool micro brews in San Diego, and the product is unbelievable. And people have realized there's a difference in quality. And even though Coors Light is $1.89, I'll spend $6 and get this high octane IPA that hits the spot because I'm worth it, and I feel like that's what Jonathan Ward is for automobiles.
You're a high octane IPA.
But you know, if even cars. Let's talk Coors, right? So maybe back in the day, Coors was started by a passionate moron like me who just wanted to make really good beer. Well, just past a point, you know, it's public or whatever, and you got shareholders, and eventually it corrupts the model. It's no longer about the passion, but I think it's great. I mean, it's like a whole kind of a renaissance of craftsmanship, and thank God there's enough people that appreciate it, from beer to backpacks to cars they don't need.
And you know, the model, which financially was just, you know, we always poor Titus, but you know, the model used to be Titus gives Chip Foose $300,000. Chip Foose makes Titus a car. Titus gives it a stupid name. Titus gets divorced and gets $41,000 for it at Barrett Jackson. Yeah. But it's got a ZZ Top guitar in the backseat. That used to be the model. And I used to, you know, I'd think about stuff, but I think like, I don't know. I can't just shell out a bunch of money and then have something that's not really worth anything. But Jonathan Ward, Singer, guys like that, Ring Brothers, the stuff, the market has caught on to the product.
Yeah, I don't necessarily understand why, but I'm really happy about that. Like, we all kind of broke that model where I think people respect that we're coming at it from like a highly functional sculpture is sort of
right.
Our goal. Yeah. You know, like look at Dickerson, you know, when he started Singer and you ask him, what's the model? I mean, there was no model. I just want to build a beautiful car.
Right.
You know, and that was the extent of it. And like him, I just took all my pennies and nickels and I just built the first one, and everyone thought I was a moron, and they're like, you're gonna make a business out of this? You're only gonna do what to what for how much?
And yeah, you know, how many cars you guys built, you think, so far?
With the Icon brand, we're on about the 130th FJ, we're on the 50th BR, we're on about the 15th Derelict, so yeah, around there.
The problem with the success is like the platforms, the Broncos and the FJs and stuff's going insane. And just to, you know, illustrate this, not that you guys do VW buses, but I, was just,
I have.
Or you do VW buses, but I mean that's not your bread and butter.
Yeah,
just saw one go for $265.
Yep,
at Mecum, I think it was. And I think it hammered it.
So that's more than this Laro?
I think it hammered. Sadly, God damn it! Now I'm mad. It hammered. I think at $265. That's a VW bus. I mean, that's the kind of people used to use them for like storage.
People live in them.
Totally.
I mean, really. So the idea that everything needs to be sleek and swoopy out the window. They will, you know, the Broncos, the Toyotas, all that stuff, they'll pay for it.
The less passion that is communicated in modern cars visually, the more people yearn for vintage.
Right.
And the more the... You know, my thing, though, is I get corrupted by all the charming, wonderful perversions and functionalities of modern cars. So that's kind of why I started Icon, because I had restored a bunch of cars dead stock because that's what you're supposed to do. And it was lovely and gorgeous. I take it out after like 2 or 3 miles. I'm like, this sucks. Like, I'm not down with being a martyr to carburetors and drum brakes.
Right.
But I can't give up the aesthetic. Like, I just – it's where it's at to me.
You know, I totally agree. And so – what Jonathan is talking about is taking like a 1918 Craftsman style home and putting Wi-Fi and all the best electronics in it.
Doesn't ruin the home.
And making it look like the old refrigerator and the old oven and the old everything, just with the best of today. Because that house, and I've lived in those houses, while it's cool, it's a pain in the ass to drive that car or live in that house if you just do it bone stock.
Yeah. So much of your design is influenced by the vintage cars, watches, architecture, culture. What are some of the more modern aspects that influence your design? Are there new cars that you – is there a new car out there that you particularly like right now?
No. Just don't hold my interest. I mean, I think back in the day, the car companies had the balls to let one guy be the perspective, you know, they let that one designer say, look, this is DeSoto. DeSoto is my aesthetic, my opinion. And that made it different from Chrysler and Dodge and all the billions of other brands. But today it's like, I don't know, Wall Street and pencil pushers and focus groups. So all this shit looks the same. And all they keep doing each year is make the damn emblem bigger and bigger and bigger.
It drives me nuts. But, yeah. I mean, I get Ram.
But there is technology, though, that is influencing. Like the electric cars, you can't ignore that. You're doing something.
Doing that and all of the new tech and from powertrain to conveniences. Yeah, I get
perverted. What are you doing on the electric car right now? Because I know I follow your social media and we talk and I see you're machining all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah. You're trying to take electric car technology and not make it look like electric car technology.
We're doing 3 EVs right now. We just finished one, which was a 72 VW thing. But the one you're talking about,
hands Jimmy down Kimmel's my favorite. Got one of those.
Yeah, yeah, I just heard that recently.
Yeah, Jimmy's got a fun one.
He got it from another guy.
Why?
Talked my ear off in, when we were in Coronado.
That would be David at Z Electric.
Yeah, who's doing a 911 now.
Yeah, him and his
or
wife
was
partner,
doing a 911.
Yeah, I think he just finished it. He's going to bring it to our big charity party in May.
By the way, that's annual cars and casino benefit, and that is May 13th at Icon. We went a couple of years ago, I think.
Last year. I think.
Or was it last year?
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah, we were serving up the Endless Rant.
Oh, we're serving up the Endless Rant. That's right. So
we had a few cocktails.
We had a couple of cocktails. I just say 2 years because every time I say to someone, oh, we went last year, they go, that was 8 years ago. So I now add time. But tickets available online, and you can go to gocampaign.org. All right, so he's going to bring that 911 out.
Yeah, so, and then Rod Emery, you know, our buddies over there are going to bring a couple 356s. Singer is coming. The Mullen Museum is bringing cool stuff. A bunch of different local custom car builders and
it's turning into Tailhook is what I'm saying. It's going crazy over there.
It's going
just getting bigger and cooler every year. So, so back to you and electric. What was, with you and electric, What was the your marching orders or I mean, your own marching orders? What did you want to try to accomplish?
Well, I thought it would be an interesting way to get more people into the mix at Icon, more different clients, right? Because one thing we never really anticipated or were smart enough to look into or do focus groups or any of that bullshit on was what is our customer, right? And we've discovered more and more that our customer isn't necessarily your typical car collector. It's someone who loves vintage cars and has tons of memories with them, maybe has owned a couple or maybe has a gaggle of them on occasion, but they never thought they could get the best of both worlds. So when they get to understand the brand, they're like, well, wait a minute. So I can have the vintage aesthetic, but I can have the engineering and drivability and reliability of modern. Then they're like, oh, shit, then they're in. So the same idea started rattling around my empty head, which was, okay, brands like Tesla, and they've proven the model. So people can understand it. They can digest electric and now charging stations and energy density. Everything's getting better. But now I think that's getting to the point where I envision someone who goes, yeah, I was going to get a Tesla, but I don't know. My neighbor's wife has one. You know, couldn't I get something that like had some more style and vintage? And I think it's a neat way to bring new people into our community. I don't anticipate that we're going to be scavenging from current clients. So my favorite one we're doing right now is a 1949 Merc, Mercury Coupe. Original paint, kick-ass condition, not chopped. And we're doing a four-wheel independent Art Morrison chassis with a nodular Dana 60 in the rear, electric-assisted power steering and large Brembos all the way around. And it's going to be a Tesla eater. So it's 800 foot-pounds of torque through dual oil-cooled AMR motors, and there's no tranny. So it's all the way up to 12,000 RPM, straight shot, no
You could
shifting.
Do like a flat floor in that, basically. You don't need the trans tunnel or anything. Well, you can change the interior if you wanted to.
You would think, but we put the motors where the tranny was.
Okay.
Because for weight distribution, that opened up some neat opportunities because we ran the Tesla 100S battery array.
Yeah.
It was just a shit ton of batteries. So we're like, okay, where are we going to put them? So we have some midship over the rear axle. We have some under the main floor. But then in the engine bay, there's a whole bunch of them. So that was super fun because we basically took the idea of, well, we still wanted to tie to like vintage hot rodding and custom cultures. So I designed this array that looks like an exaggerated V8 with like Fenton heads and cool polished hardware and
We're looking at it. Looks amazing.
It's insane. Yeah, so that houses a lot of the battery modules and the Reinhardt controller.
So it looks like a billet block. Looks like sort of like a billet-shaped engine block.
V8, yeah.
But you stuffed it with batteries.
Yeah, it's batteries and controllers.
And where is that? Like that? Is that in the bay?
Yeah, so when you lift the hood, that's like, wha-bam, right. It's right there where the old V8 should have been.
Yeah, this is very innovative because it is the, you know, you look at the Chevy Volt and even the more you look at the Tesla SUV and stuff like that, it's so bland. I mean, it's just, it's so soulless, you know, it's sort of what they'd envisioned in, you know, Logan's Run and stuff.
Yeah.
Just these people moving bars of soap that didn't make any noise, that didn't have any personality, that there was no distinction between this one and that one. It was just sort of the boom.
It's interesting is because when they started coming out, you know, these EV cars, something like the Nissan Leaf, it doesn't make any engine noise. So when you start driving it down the street, you're like, God, it's weird looking and the lights are shaped weird and there's a lot of weird plastic and it's all to shape the air to reduce wind noise because that's all you hear now. Now, when you're doing a 50 Merc, no one's really going to care.
Yeah,
because
try doing a 73 VW thing. 99 yeah. billion rattles that you couldn't have heard when it had the oil burner in the back. Oh, my God. Weeks and weeks of chasing rattles with literally our microphones, like 15 mics on a switch box.
Really?
All over the car. It's a really cool system.
And that's when it's not moving. Once you start driving it.
But you know, the noise is one thing that irks me, and I got to get my neighbor drunk enough to agree. I have my neighbor for like 25 years is a brilliant sound engineer. And I'm like, come on. So the gas pedal is basically a potentiometer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got micro-ohms and ranges. Like, what if there's got to be someone who can develop, because it doesn't look like it's going to be me, like an app or something where, okay, today I wanted to sound like a Columbo 12. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow I wanted like a Merlin or,
yeah,
right, you know, a 502 with four carbs. Or so you could literally make that part of the fun part of the experience and you tie it into the gas pedal range.
Right. And so it'll only for electric, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yeah, that's a good way to really
cover up some of the noise.
Too. It'd be good for a four-banger Colt.
That's super fun. I think it's an ingenious idea. We got a question up there. But first, I can't. Jonathan has so many cool projects that I think the last time we talked to you, you were going full prototype, bespoke. And other than it being real cool, I don't even remember exactly what it was. But you were.
Was it the Aston Martin?
Oh, yeah, there was a Zagato. It may have been the Zagato. So what's going on with some of that stuff?
Well, specifically, that one's kind of a sad story because we were rolling and rolling. We finish it in Italy. We fly the car back to the States, and we're getting ready to get into the final phase. And then I got a charming letter from Aston Martin. And they're saying, oh, no, you may not do this.
Really?
Yeah, it was totally asinine, too, because their issue was trade dress. And the two trademark trade dress items that they cite are not on my car. Not at all. So their side grill and their front grill. And I'm no, that's not what I used. We did the Italian version, and we partnered with the dude whose hand was on the pencil in 59 who designed those. And under Italian law, he has the rights. What am I going to do? Take Aston Martin to The Hague?
Right.
So we've been at a dead halt for over a year in discussion with them. But of course, we figure out why. Like 3 or 4 weeks ago, they announced they're doing a reissue DB4 Zagato. It's like, guys, why couldn't you just been straight with me? God forbid, right? And just tell me that.
I saw, you know.
It never works that way.
Speaking of, I don't know, bland or what have you, when I was over at Galpin 2 months ago, one guy knew I was an Aston guy. And I always thought Aston, out of all the modern companies, aesthetically got it right. They were the closest to getting it right.
Yeah.
And I like the DB9 and I like the DB9S a lot. And then the guy showed me the new Vortexia, whatever it was, like the next one beyond. And I was like, you pushed too far. You went too far.
Vulcan, that like crazy supercarish one.
The
DB9 looks nice. The DB9S to me looks nicer. And then they just kept pushing, and now it got it got a little weird.
Yeah.
And
although the 177 wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting.
It's weird because. Like technology caught up to them, and it shouldn't have. They long hoods and big V12s and grand touring. You know, that was their thing, and now it they got caught up.
Yeah,
and I feel like they started to try to compete 0 to 60 or top speed with Ferrari, McLaren, or whatever, and they kind of lost it. And McLaren, I've never liked, always respected. Never liked aesthetically because it's just so soulless. Yeah. I know it's all done in the name of downforce or all done in the name of low.
But it looks like a 10-year-old supercar.
Right.
Like the lines. Yeah. Everyone I know has one. Says bulletproof, the best genius.
Absolutely.
And we've driven a few, and they're great.
But the look of it.
But they're weird looking.
What about Ferrari, though? FCA, to me, has ruined Ferrari.
Oh, like, yeah.
Used to be aluminum, now is some Mylar bullshit vacuum wrap piece of plastic. The nav is the same thing like in a Jeep Rubicon. Like, dudes, of all brands to ruin in a corporate way.
The 355 I thought was great looking. The 360 I like. And then the 358, they're starting to spin off again into the robot car. Mm-hmm. Phase of something, and I don't know. I just the aesthetic.
But I did like the front engine cars.
The
like
front engine stuff I like the 599 or the whatever the. Six,
but again, and, even if I like the look, and then you hop in it and you start touching things, like that tactile thing is gone. Like you might as well be in whatever.
Right, but I felt that way even about Maserati when you know, you get in the Maserati, well, that was like, these the are the window Maserati. Switches from the Chrysler 300C.
Yes, but this is the entry car for the Ferrari. We make a sound like a kind of Ferrari.
When I was,
you can lease it.
When I was watching the bus go down for 265 at Mecum, I saw an 09 Maserati Quattroport go for $25,000.
Oh, yeah.
I don't dislike it that much. Like, for 25 grand,
I'll take it.
Yeah, but you'll see an 89 Quattroporte sell for 1500 and you'll congratulate the guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's take a phone call here. Max Patty, tell me when you got that tape you were building the other.
Oh, yeah, sure thing.
Sure thing. Josh, 33, Orlando.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's going on there, Josh?
I have a new BMW M2 on order. It's going to show up.
Yeah.
It'll be July sometime.
Yeah.
And I was curious what y'all thought about the break-in process. Read a couple different things.
Shit, it's warranted. Take that bugger up to the red line, peg it till it goes dot, 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 and shift.
We have
don't listen to anything.
Who do we have? Lake Speed in here?
So Lake Speed was in
we
here.
We had a long, long oil-based conversation with Lake Speed. His thing is, there is break-in oil.
There is break-in oil.
He said, we grilled him. We said, even modern-day cars with computers and warranties and everything else, he said, still should break them in. And he said, though, you don't need to put break-in oil in it. Just go drive around the oil that it comes in and then swap it.
He said, you're okay. Like, it would be better if you actually, like, if you've got your new M2 and it arrives at your house, it's got 17 miles on it. If you put break-in oil in it and you run your first 500 miles with a good break-in oil, that's better.
I've seen engines have trouble from having too much of the assembly lube in them, and then it gums up the uptake tube in the pan.
Well, but here's the deal, because I don't want to hassle Josh. You can use the oil that it comes with from the dealer as break-in oil. Just drive it around a little bit. And then just dump that oil.
Well, that's the thing.
And put it back.
Is I agree that even though the first service interval on that car is probably 12,000 miles, I agree that the assembly lube and everything else, do 500 miles and then change the oil and then consider the next one your first oil.
Avoid massive changes in RPMs via abrupt downshifts. I'd keep it under, 6,000 RPMs for a while. I'd be pretty mellow.
Yeah. I guess the point is there is a break-in period. And I always remember, in my M3, I believe, my 99 M3, in the manual, there was a chapter on break-in period, which...
Such a fun car, though. I hope you enjoy it. That car is so much fun.
Yeah.
I need to see a picture of it because I know the M1 and I know the M3, and I'm confused
Basically,
about the
M2. M2 is what the M1 was when they decided to change their numeric series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Super fun, rowdy, fat
straight
little car.
Straight turbo.
Little turbo.
Inline six with a turbo.
365 horsepower.
I think it has a twin turbo.
Break-in period of,
oh, yeah.
It's single
Sorry.
Turbo.
Oh, it's single?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, single twin scroll.
Oh, okay. So it's 365 horsepower?
Yeah, and then I think it has an overboost function for the, gets a torque up to 360-something or 370 for 7 seconds at a time.
And what's that thing got, a 3.2, 3 liter?
Three liter.
Wow, that's a fun little car. All right, don't use break-in oil, but use the oil that's in the car. Drive around for a few hundred miles and then dump it and get the new stuff. So says Lake Speed. And by the way, when you do that, use your Garage Boss. That's right. They do oil drain pans. I'll tell you, you don't have to just drain it into that weird metal pan that everyone's been using for million years, or that weird black plastic one, and then try to put it into the milk jugs. Now, you use your Garage Boss. You can drain it right into it, then put the cap on it, then just carry it right to the recycling place. Garage Boss, and we use them here. Matt, you just did it on your...
Yeah, a couple weeks ago I did it on the Mustang. Break-in oil.
They got a full line of drain pans with no-mess solutions, and they have disposable tearaway sheets and integrated funnels, and they do funnels. They do everything. And so you look like you know what you're doing. So go to Garage Boss. That's BOSS. And, again, don't look like a fool. And when you take it to the recycling centers, pick the thing up like a suitcase and walk it on over there. From oil pan to drain pan to recycling center, It's that easy. It's available at Amazon.com. Just search Garage Boss. That's B-O-S-S. All right, Jonathan Ward and Matt. So I did this Trans Am race a couple of weeks back up at Willow Springs.
No,
I thought you were there.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It's weird.
I thought I told we did the car show last night when I was doing my Adam Kroll and Friends Build Stuff Live. We did the garage and car show. But so Chris whacked together a 2-minute version of it.
Oh, I heard about it this weekend.
I thought you would enjoy, but we didn't air it because we didn't have it ready for that. But Leno's coming in, I think, at the end. He's going to do the last show.
Oh, he is?
He's coming in. So, so we'll do that. But CarCast, guys. There's like a short version and a long version, but I figure we'll just do the 2-minute version, and then you'll have the whole race in 2 minutes. And Jonathan, you can enjoy, and we'll put that up at carcastshow.com.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, go ahead and fire it up. This is Willow Springs, known as the fastest track in the West. This is my first professional race, and it's in the Trans Am series. This is my car. It's the top of the Trans Am food chain. More than 850 horsepower. So we're just staging up.
It's a great color.
Yeah, I think it's a great color too. It's a like blue gray. It sets off the blue. Checkered flag. So it's like a 2-minute version of the entire thing. You can see that get out of the car, get in the car, get through the car.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to run it on the Leno show.
So the Leno episode of your show.
I think
that's what you're talking about, because he's got a show too.
No, we wouldn't slum it down. He's got a car. How good is that engine sound?
Oh, so, it does. So I mean, that car ran so good. By the way, those guys at Burton Racing built a hell of a car.
Oh, absolutely. And I think even with all the horsepower, easier to drive than an old car.
It's a
that's my
race
whole
car.
Point. Adam.
That's been his theory for since he started this whole thing. Was how do you make it drive well?
Yeah, it's easier to drive than the vintage race cars, even with 400 more horsepower or whatever it is.
Is that the color from the new Porsche?
I don't think that's the same
color.
But they had just painted that car. It was the first time they switched from the black car to the gray and blue car for that race, color, yeah. It looked fantastic.
I agree, and Jonathan's got a very keen aesthetic, because I kept looking at that, and it's such a non-race car color.
Perfect.
Color,
yeah.
And it's perfect. And there's a color. It's kind of interesting, but I took a tour through I think it's in Gaydon, through Aston Martin.
Okay.
Once upon a time. Really cool factory tour. And I was kind of like fantasizing because I was thinking about a DB9 or DBS. And the key with all this stuff is like, forget the black on black or the silver with the black interior that everyone's going to think you're driving a Jag and whatever else. And I started like, the idea was to try to think of things that were bizarre. Like my DB9 is Aston Martin Racing Green with burgundy, with a red leather interior, and it looks killer. It's just totally, you wouldn't think of it. And the color combo, I never ordered it.
Yeah.
But the color combo I came up with was a green interior, like the leather sofa, like British leather sofa green, that sort of, I don't know what kind, it's just a very pure green.
Yeah.
You can picture it in leather and picture it on a sofa.
Like a Chesterfield.
Yeah. As an interior with a kind of a gray, I was saying, you know the color of plastic conduit, like that gray color, like it's a gray.
Like a dove milky gray.
Right. Like
that'd be
gray
kick-ass.
Exterior with that green interior.
But a non-metallic, just like the shiny.
I didn't get that far, but I just, but I figured, I just kept picturing that flexible, shiny gray conduit, like variable plastic conduit.
That'd be super cool.
And that green sofa, English leather sofa interior. And I just thought, on that DBS, wouldn't that be a killer
when you're having that conversation with them, you're like, do you have any conduit around the building that's exposed and maybe grandma's couch?
We're doing a 58 Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud derelict that's going to piss off a lot of people because we put a dry sump LS7 in it and independent suspension and stuff. But the point of bringing this up, my like analog therapy hobby on weekends has been leather crafts. So I've been taking classes and stitching all sorts of stuff I don't need. But we're doing this Rolls and it had this kick-ass two-tone green Connelly interior.
And
it was original.
Now. Yeah.
So we're redoing it for the client, but I took some scissors to it. I took all that original Connelly leather and it's all messed up and chalky and screwed. So my first project was like a derelict watch band out of that cool old green, that old British green.
Oh, my God.
I saved all the rest of the hides. I'm going to keep doing it.
I love
that. Who
gets
the watch band? You were the client.
My watch.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. I love the derelict
watch
band.
No one would buy the first one. It sucked. But.
So this will be – what year's the Rolls?
58.
Yeah, by the way, you go to those auctions and you see the modern day Rolls and the Bentleys stuff. They're practically free. But the shape of those cars are so. I was watching Arthur II on the Rocks last night, and like Bitterman was driving him around and the Rolls.
Is that worth watching? By the way,
no.
And this one was brilliant.
No, I'll tell you why. Well, I'll tell you why all those movies are worth watching because you get to see what Manhattan looked like in 1988. Like what cars? Every cab was just like a Crown Vic or whatever.
Yeah.
Like every cab,
couple checkers, buildings. Still.
But the rich guy's chauffeured car was like.
Yeah, but you get to see a snapshot in time of our culture from I don't know what year Arthur II Max Zapata was, but I'm just going to go from like 1985. It's exactly what our culture looked like because they're in Manhattan. So the way everyone dresses, the cars everyone drives, the architecture, whatever, the food, like everything is just spot on that year. And I always just watch it for that reason. Then I watch Heart to Heart. But 1988. Jesus, I was right.
Nailed
initially.
It.
Sad. You love the shape of those cars, but they just don't work. And the derelict version of that is beautiful because derelicts we've seen done, as Jonathan Ward has coined the phrase, in sort of like, well, the idea is you got the kind of beater car with the fire-breathing engine under the hood. But this is not that. This is the refined gentleman's car that works.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one done. We're going to be done.
How does it
soon.
Make it a derelict and not a reformer?
So
another one of
So when we do the reformers, they're all pretty and shiny and look Concorde new, and then we're hiding all the re-engineering that we do. With the derelict, we leave the funky barn fine patina as it is on the outside and the dents and the scratches, and then hide all the engineering again and then geek out on the interior usually.
So the Rolls Royce is going to end up being
a derelict because it's original paint, two-tone green. It's super cool. But then on the inside, all, you know, all new wood and leather and blah, 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 and the new chassis and Brembo's independent suspension LSF.
And the LS7. It's going to sound not like a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, part of the fun. That's part of the discussion with a client. Like, okay, should we emulate the refinement of the original car and do double muffs and tie them together, blah, blah, blah? Or do you want to – he's like, I'd like to scare small children, please. The guy out of Australia.
Is there anything can we get into production on some of these cars? Like, you know, obviously –
like the Broncos and
– yeah, but with the derelicts. Yeah, like let's say you pick a platform –
yeah,
like,
I've thought about that. Like a Tri-5 Chevy, they're abundant enough.
Right.
Yeah. If it's a wagon or a convertible or a two-door or a post, a non-post, four-door, doesn't matter.
Right. And a lot of people love them.
Yeah. All the stock restoration parts for them are like on Amazon. They're so commoditized. You can get anything and everything for them.
Right.
And that would give us an opportunity to create some relative efficiencies in our asinine business model. And I thought about that, actually. I thought that would be a cool way to go. But the problem is despite our shop scale, which is – it's bigger than the last time you guys were there. We took – we're about 85,000 square feet. We don't have enough room or skilled technicians to entertain something that would sell at a higher volume.
Well, also, even though if when everything's bespoke, it's just everything, you know, and we all know what a hassle is. But – in a weird way, it does kind of fly in the face of the initial manifesto, which is we're going to take these crazy cars that have been forgotten and do it. And it's kind of a one of one sort of thing. And I get it. You know, not everyone's got 400 grand to throw around at a car, but in a weird way, maybe it's purist when it's this way.
I think it's sort of the purest. It's one off. It's totally for you. We pick every last thing with the client, but at the same time, it's really stupid business.
Sure.
People on my team are like, here. For example, each rack, we look at the cost of that square footage and the technician and all the charming California overhead issues. And you look at what that rack costs a day, and you look at what it puts out if I were just to stick to the menu and build more FJs and build more BRs and build more TRs.
From a financial standpoint, your business guys are like, let's build more Broncos.
Right, but I've
your
never
brain
listened
never works
to them.
That way. Like, your brain's never going to work.
Well,
I'm doing this because I love it, and I make a good living with the production stuff we do as it is.
Yeah.
And it's still not feeling like a real job, but – I get bored in a hurry if I just stuck to production.
Well, they told Ferrari to build streetcars. Didn't really want to do it. Did a couple. But see, here's what I would say to the bean counters. Yes, I'm talking about the Mexicans who work. No. The guys that are pushing the pencils, counting the beans. I would say that it's really hard to put a price on, you know, the Jonathan Ward brand.
Yeah.
But that the Jonathan Ward brand is pushed ahead with the derelicts and these projects. They get ink. They get attention. Yes, you could do another Bronco, but that doesn't get you the notoriety. So there is an element, and it's kind of hard to calculate it because it's invisible. But you're talking about the brand, the Jonathan Ward brand, and the cachet and whatever that brings. And if you start sliding into becoming Coors.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Then you flash forward 100 years and now Coors is a joke.
But even those factors were tributary to me. To me, it was all about where am I happiest? You know, where's my giggle zone? And that's that design and engineering phase that doing a constant procession of one-offs is the only way to do that. And then we've gleaned a lot of intelligence from those processes because, oh, shit, how do we put a AM Vantage Sport V12 on something? We got to learn those solutions. So electrical solutions, mechanical engineering, we continue to learn so much with those that in turn feeds back to production because we take those tricks and apply them to the production models.
Yeah, I. It's like aerospace getting trickling down.
Yep.
All right, let me tell you about AMSOIL. We're talking about oil before. Wear on pistons can lead to a loss of power. We know that.
No.
Provides 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than the industry standard. Go to AMSOIL. That's AMSOIL.com/carcast for more details. So, over
good
time.
Stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at these things. It stayed 82% under the allowable threshold for oil thickening over the heat, which compromises the oil. Heat's not anyone's friend. It's not friends. Not good. Not friends with your hair.
Nope.
Not friends with your oil.
Nope.
Not really friends with anything.
Snakes like
heat. Snakes like heat, but then we don't like snakes. So
right,
it's nobody's
go.
Friend. AMSOIL Signature Series Synthetic Motor Oil protects against harmful deposits on turbochargers 4 times better than Mobil 1 extended performance.
Everything's running turbos these days now.
That's what I was thinking when I was looking at this. And 3.6 better times better than Royal Purple in industry standard testing. So if you want the good stuff, and boy, when you get better than Mobil 1 and you get better than Royal Purple, you are saying something. So let's go with some AMSOIL. AMSOIL.com/carcast for more details. They should send us some. Do we have any of this yet? We
gotta
get some of this. I didn't run it in the
Chris
race
has
cars.
Been drinking it, putting it on his breakfast cereal.
He's going healthier. He's putting it on a salad now. AMSOIL.com/carcast. Yeah. So, Jonathan, always when you ever talk to Jonathan, I always just think of like Gail Banks.
I love Gail.
Yeah, you should. It's like looking at a slightly older version of you, which is. Every time we talk to Jonathan, he starts talking about this, and then he starts talking about that, and then we start drifting off into other subjects, and then you realize this aesthetic, creative, mechanical mind really doesn't have boundaries. It is.
Or the ability to focus.
Or the ability to focus. Well, everything is interesting.
Yeah.
And then that applies to architecture and what have you. It's all
I'm basically
all there.
A crow.
Yes, you just bounce around looking for shiny stuff and seeing if you can lift it up and fly back with it.
And then occasionally he makes his own watch bands out of it, the stuff he finds.
I agree, and it's a thing where I've always had this with my kids where it's study, learn, memorize, and I'm like either they're curious or they're not. If you're curious, you'll nothing can stop you, and if you're not, God help you. I don't know what we're gonna do, but I'm. And Jonathan, you must run into this because I run into it because I'm running around all the time, saying to people, why aren't you more into stuff or into life or into this? Isn't this cool? Look at this.
Yeah.
And they're like, I want to play video games or something. Or I want to take a nap or I want to watch, I want to binge watch Game of Thrones or something. And I'm like, why don't you want to do all this other stuff? And they're like, I don't know. And also, stop annoying me with your stupid questions, which is another thing where it's like, am I annoying you with life? It's weird, right?
Well, it's best understood for me and my two sons. So I got an 18-year-old who's perfectly happy to joystick around and play his games and, blah, 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 blah,
right.
And not very motivated. He's all good. And then I have my 14-year-old who comes to me with these abstract theoretical engineering questions before I've had my coffee, which is not a good time for an intelligent
right.
question for me. But the difference is so distinct, and I don't think it has – I think we bring that with us into life.
Absolutely.
The bummer though is our school system does not embrace that, promote it. It's in Norway, I think it is, 10th grade is all about making sure you understand the range of opportunities and careers and expertise to help you find something you're passionate about.
Like
I was on a totally different career path, but I was not passionate about it at all.
Yeah.
And I quit and just pressed reset, and so did my wife, and we winged it and started Icon and our other brand TLC, and thank God I did.
Well,
sounds like Jonathan has a favorite son.
It's
all right.
It's true. This notion that that's why I laugh my ass off when I watch all these fucking commercials that we pay for. It's like read to your child, talk to your child, sing to your child. Their brain develops 80%. Oh fuck you! They're just who they are. And they're just, that's just, I have a boy and a girl twin, and they're just who they are. It has nothing to do.
But are they polarly unique?
They're not.
They're 1,000% different. They're biggest. They get along pretty well, but the girl is like living with a macaw who's like.
Had, I did that, so I can relate.
Had too much like Claritin or something. Is like beaked up on Claritin, like a macaw beaked up. And the other day, just to show like.
Super smart, though. Both kids are smart. Both kids are very respectful and mature for their age.
Yes, yes, yes. They're easily, you know, transportable. I mean, what I mean is like they're nothing. Like we brought Sonny to Willow Springs with us. We went 3 days in a row. He went, I think, Friday and Sunday for the race. You don't even know he's there. Like you just throw him in the back of the Lincoln, drive out. We're there, you know, qualifying at 10 in the morning, race at 3 in the afternoon. He's not like poking around going, huh. What, it's getting kind of late. Like, where, you know, he just,
yes,
he doesn't say, like, I'm hungry. Yeah, like, he just,
I love his letter in your office about voting the dog as his favorite, what is it, relative or family member. It's so cute.
So he, the other day, if you just want to know, like, girls and boys, he's on the sofa watching TV, and he's Mr. Mellow, and my daughter's just screaming at the top of her lungs, Sonny, Sonny, Sonny. She's going nuts on him. And I have to come into the room and figure out what's going on. She decided to wash her hair in the sink in the kitchen, but neglected to bring a towel for herself. And she's screaming at the top of her lungs for Sonny to get her a towel.
And that's happened enough times that Sonny has the art of tune out.
Yeah, Sonny's totally like, hey, you decided to wash your hair and you decided not to bring a towel. And now you're going to have to go provide a towel. And she's incensed and screaming at the top of her lungs that he needs to get her a towel. Yeah. And he's just dug in. He's mellow as can be. He's just not going to do it. And they have totally different weird wiring, and that's just who they are. But I agree.
But when you walk into the room, do you say, Natalia, where's your towel? Or do you say, Sonny, why didn't you get a towel?
No, I'm always...
You just peek your head and then back away quietly, no, like I'm you weren't even there?
Listen, I'm always on the side of... My world is, if you get shot in the face... because you hopped over the fence and tried to steal your neighbor's hibachi, I'm cool with it. I wish that you didn't get shot in the face, but if you decide to jump over the fence and you decide that you're going to take that guy's $13 hibachi and he's just standing out in the porch cleaning his gun, that's all on you. You decided. You set that in motion. Yeah. And if you go to wash your hair in the sink. I don't know why you're washing your hair in the kitchen sink, but either way, if you're going to wash your hair in the sink and you forgot to bring yourself a towel, that is up to you. Now, I would like it if Sonny could be a little more courteous and go get it, but the fact that she expects that he need, the fact that she's having a meltdown that he's not, oh no. Mm-mm. There's one way this problem could be solved. The other way is an optional way. The first way it could be solved is you remember to bring your towel. And the more you scream at the other guy who's not bringing in the towel, the less motivated you will be to bring yourself a towel next time.
Or
this is up to you.
Learn the art of bribery.
Right.
Or Sonny, could you please bring me a towel?
Nah, probably wouldn't work.
Right.
Well, he'd be thrown off. He'd be like, I don't understand what you asked me.
Yes.
Like, why are you so
don't
quiet?
Worry. I went and got her a towel. And then when she did get the towel and she got herself together and dried off, she just went over there and punched him. So she's an insane.
She's going to get away with that for like another year, and then he's going to grow 9 inches taller, and it's going
to
be...
Well, he's going to have to toughen up because we're now trying to teach him at age 10 to ride a goddamn bicycle, which he says he doesn't want to learn how to ride. And I'm like, are you insane?
When are you supposed to ride a bicycle?
6, 3, zygote. Like
I remember being pretty young riding a bike.
I was going through a whole bunch of other stuff, and I dug up this old picture of me playing for the East Valley Trojans, and I was looking at it, and I was like, I was 11, and I was like, what's wrong with this picture? And then I realized, oh, I broke my shoulder, and I have my cast under my jersey. If you look at me to the farthest right, there's just a picture. It's a team picture.
Oh, yeah. It looks like you got boobs.
And I got my I got my shoulder broken, and I got my cast under it. And the reason I remember that as it pertains to Sonny not being able to ride a bicycle is I was riding a unicycle the whole time I had my shoulder broken and a cast on.
Jesus, look at that hair.
Hey, it was the 70s, man. You had to do it.
I used to go to school when I lived in New York City. It was like, I was on 45th, and school was like 67th, and unicycle was my preferred mode of transportation.
Really? Yeah. Great minds. Yes. I have a broken shoulder. I have a cast on, and it's underneath my jersey. And the reason it's underneath my jersey is my jersey was cut off of me because my shoulder was so insanely dislocated.
Yeah.
When I was out in the middle of this field playing a game, they saw me and they couldn't move me. They cut my jersey off and they like removed it and they cut my shoulder pads off and they saw that my shoulder was so jacked out of place that the dads.
I bet your dad came running.
I don't think he was there. But my dad, I think he was there. I don't know what he said. But the dad just all looked at me and went like, somebody call an ambulance.
Yeah, he's
and
fucked. They
called an ambulance. And that's why it's not even poking through the stupid jersey. But
how old were you? When was it?
I was 11. Well, it was what year was that team from? It says it.
75.
I was born in 64, so I had to be 11. Oh,
75 is the year I was born.
So Sonny should learn how to ride a bicycle because Daddy was riding a unicycle with a cast on his arm.
But it sounds like Sonny's the guy who, if you pulled that angle, he would just entrench himself deeper in his perspective of...
No attempts to pull any angles. But I didn't know you were a unicycle guy.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time, but yeah, it's good fun.
I wonder...
It's the next derelict project.
I wonder if there is some... do you have... Well, you must have good balance.
Yeah.
And I felt...
Assuming you were a good unicycle.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to be good. You just have to be able to ride.
I went to circus school as a kid, too. I used to do the high wire and stuff. It was super fun.
Don't you, and now as we spin off and get a little philosophical here, but I've told people, I think balance, which is rarely discussed, everyone talks about sort of academics or focus or, you know, whatever, grit or whatever. They talk about a lot of things, but I have very good balance, and I feel like the balance is applicable to almost anything in life. It helps you get good at things fast, and it just helps in life. To just literally, it's sort of literal and a figurative version of balance, but just balance. And I wonder if your balance is what makes you able to do so many different things simultaneously.
I don't know, but my wife can multitask much better than me.
Really? Does she have good physical balance?
Yeah, but I think
like
more
Mr. Miyagi kind of balance.
Well, I mean, she has a vagina, and they're much better at multitasking. And every time I try to, I'm going to screw something up. And so my thing is more I am monocular. So like as I got into this leathercraft hobby, I am at the University of YouTube, and I'm ordering books, and I'm finding the best tools and shipping them in. And then like to my wife's chagrin, weekends, scotch, table – tools. I could literally sit there and not even get up for a pee and do it 8 hours a day through the weekend. And like, I am severely focused. So I think it's probably an ADHD thing or.
But is your wife in the other room screaming to get a towel and you're just ignoring her when you're doing that? Yeah. Or do you get the towel?
And what like, kind of.
50-50. Okay.
What kind of student?
So you and Sonny would get along great.
What kind of student were you?
Into what I was into and right. Absolutely a train wreck. For the things I wasn't into.
I was the same way on that.
Like if I dug it, I would dig in and do great. If I thought it was a complete waste of my time and something I would never use in life, I was a horrible student.
Isn't it? I think what it is, and my son does have a lot of this, and I have pallets with metric tons of this, which is once if I deem something unimportant – it's unimportant.
Yeah.
And people will sit around and be like, you've got to learn the metric system or you're not going to be employable. And I'm like, No. Like, I remember...
That's it. I'm out.
Jimmy Kimmel was explaining to me in 1994, you're going to have to learn to splice audio tape. Like, you got to learn to splice it with a razor and then put it together with scotch tape and do audio splicing. And I went like, no, I don't think so. And he's like, hey, if you could learn that, it'd be right. And I'm like, they're going to have a computer figure this out in like 10 minutes, aren't they? And he's like, you really need to learn this. I was like, no. And it works that way with the, when everyone's freaking out over the Zika virus,
yeah,
or killer bees or third hand smoke or whatever it is they're trying to get me into this week to freak out about. I just look at it and I go, not interested.
Nah.
And when I'm not, when I've decided, not that I'm not interested, but that it has no importance, that there is no killer bees, that there is no third hand smoke, that I'm not going to have to learn how to cut audio tape, like nothing. Once I decide it, it's dead to me. And then you're a horrible student because you have people standing above you in cardigan sweaters going, you need to learn this. And in your mind, you've went, no, I don't.
Yeah, you're blocking it out. Yeah, I'm that guy. Totally.
Yeah, I think my son is he is that guy, except he's in the fifth grade, and now he's screwed. But you got to walk into the room, and he's like trying to memorize spelling words. And you're like, well, what are we doing here? It's 2017. What are we memorizing spelling words just so you can spit them back out on the quiz tomorrow? Like, what? Weren't we? It was so funny. I said to him, just learn how to think. You just got to learn how to think. When you learn how to think, then you're fine.
And everything, but nobody knows how to teach that.
Everything will cover. Well, but here's the thing. I said, study everybody, study patterns, and then understand how everything works. And 20 minutes later, we went into my wife's office, and he said, where are you going tonight, Mommy? She said, I'm doing a podcast or something. He said, when are you going to be home? She said, I'll be home at 9:30. And Sonny, whose bedtime is about 10:15, said, okay, well, I guess I'll see you tomorrow. And I said, why? What was that? And he said, well, when she says 9:30, we're talking 10:15, 10:30, 10:45. And I said, buddy, you just studied a pattern.
That's
you
it.
Just picked someone's pattern, studied it, and you have your information.
That's intelligence.
Yes. Yeah. You had a person just tell you an answer, 9:30. You ran it through your study pattern, and your pattern of study said 10:15 to 10:45.
Think, communicate, advocate. That's what I tell my kids. Like, forget the all the redundancy and don't stress about that test. But self-advocacy skills, communication, looking people in the eye, being thoughtful and being aware of all the cool shit around you and people around
yes.
you. And that's everything.
By the way, she came home at 9:45, which everyone deemed as early, which is weird because she said 9:30, but everyone said, she's home early. And then
put all our shit away. Get back to bed.
So I told Sonny, all right, now you have to put that into your computer too because you have to adjust. She did come home earlier than you'd anticipated. Yeah. All right. I'd anticipate you saving some money if you go to Geico. You can save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, and you don't even have to leave the house. You sit there with your leather, your tools, your glass of single malt scotch, and just go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. Why wouldn't you do that? Look, if you're listening, you like cars, you have cars, maybe you have multiple cars, and you want to save a bunch of money. So go to geico.com. 15 minutes, could be saying 15% or more on your car insurance. The event that is Saturday, May 13th, we should be there, right?
Yep.
We will be there. That is Icon Workshop.
I was going to ask you if you were going to be there.
I think.
It's on my list
Saturday,
of things to ask you.
Yeah. We're going, man. It's the fourth annual car and casino benefit for GO campaign. And you can go online. You can go to gocampaign.org. Really cool stuff. Absolutely amazing. And just fun to get a glass of Endless Rain or Mangria or what have you and just wander around and look at some of those projects.
Are you capping off how many tickets could sell? Is this thing like we should go now and get the tickets? Like,
yeah.
What's the deal?
Yeah, we're going to cap it at 500 this year. So what about 350 last year? Bigger shop now, more stuff in the silent auction, more kids in need. So 500's our cap.
Oh, so they should bring some auction money?
Oh, hell yeah. I put together the silent auction, and it's pretty ridiculous. A lot of help from a lot of unique brands.
Ooh,
and friends.
Yeah. Private tour, Jay Leno's garage.
Yeah, maybe get a watch band made by...
Yeah. I'm such a watch geek. Like, there's 30 watches in an auction of like 120 items. But just all my friends in the watch community, they're generous. They're like, oh, and I've seen what you're doing with this charity. It's great. Boom. And then we end up with a watch.
Yeah.
We never have too many watches at an auction.
No.
Because I'll just bid on them if no one else does.
Go to, if you want to check out some of the cars, you can go to icon4x4.com. Jonathan Ward, always a pleasure. Oh, for us, you can get my movie, The 24-Hour War. People seem to be enjoying that. It's available now. You can stream it if you have Amazon Prime. You can get it for free. You got the Newman doc out there. Well, get a copy of it. You can get the T-shirts and stuff like that. It's at chassis.com. chassy.com. And my show on Spike Monday nights, 11 o'clock. Jen Elfman's coming up. We're doing a Supercross. So come check that one out.
She raced, remember?
The Toyota Grand Prix.
Yeah, the Pro Celebrity Race.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, we were talking about it last night. They said, don't say Toyota.
She raced in the Pro Celebrity Race.
It's so weird. You just realize you can't say, okay.
Anyway. Rules.
Rules, rules, and rules. All right, and order a little Endless Rant over at Corolla Drinks and check out Matt's pod. Shift and Steer, do that at Podcast One and all that. And Corolla Digital. Until next time, Adam Corolla, Jonathan Ward, and Matt the Moderator saying, keep the air in the spare.
Nice seeing you guys.
Good seeing you, John. And the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.